The Batman Universe Comic Podcast. Hey, this is Scott Snyder.
Hi, this is Denny O'Neill.
My name is Neil Adams.
And this is Paul Dini.
Hi, my name is Dan DiDio.
This is Kevin Conroy.
Hey, this is Francis Manapul.
Hi, this is Jim Lee, and you're listening to the Batman Universe Comic Podcast.
Universe Comic Podcast, episode number 169. I'm your host, Dustin. Today I have with me...
This is Ed.
And this is Stella.
And we are bringing the latest comic news and comic book reviews from the weeks of August 16th through August 29th. We have a little bit of comic news, no specific book reviews to do, but we do have our spotlight, and we do have listener Q&As as well as our discussion. So, with that, we're going to get into our news. Very first thing I have to talk about is I actually forgot to mention this on the last episode just because there was so much other stuff relating to books, but it wasn't really time sensitive. So on August 14th, it was announced by DC that November's variant covers will in fact feature the Looney Tunes. So if you pick up a copy of Catwoman, Catwoman is holding Tweety Bird in her hand. There is a long list of comics that will get these variant covers, as we've discussed various times in the past. Full list and the cover gallery for all of the TVU-related issues is over on the website for you to check out. So please do that if you're interested.
Perfect.
Moving straight into other news, first up, the solicits came out, and the first things we have is the trades. As far as trades go, on August 17th, DC released all of the solicits that will be for books that will be coming out in December of this year and January of next year. Several of these collected editions of our current and former ongoing titles, including Detective Comics Volume 7 and hardcover, Batman Superman Volume 3 trade paperback, Catwoman Volume 4 trade paperback, Earth 2 World's End Volume 2 trade paperback, Harley Quinn Volume 2 trade paperback, as well as other collected editions either from outside the main DC line or from comics that predate it, including Batman 66 Volume 3 trade paperback, Teen Titans Go, Truth, Justice, and Pizza trade paperback. Other noteworthy titles for TVU fans include trade paperback celebration of the most incredible and memorable fights between Batman and Superman in advance of Batman vs. Superman next March for $9.99, which includes issues from The Dark Knight Returns, Batman both pre- and post-Flashpoint, Superman, Batman, and Justice League. These solicitations also include a deluxe hardcover edition of Matt Wagner's miniseries Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, Trinity, a trade paperback of the miniseries, Batman The Doom That Came to Gotham, a new, longer, and more expensive hardcover of Batman by Neil Adams, which collects the creator's entire history of The Dark Knight, new trade paperbacks from the old titles Nightwing by Chuck Dixon and Suicide Squad by John Ostrander, and a 100-page super spectacular that serves as a collection of older stories based on the heroes now appearing in the upcoming miniseries Titans Hunt. So the full list of the solicits as far as the Batman universe goes is over on the website pertaining to graphic novels. There's a lot of them. It's not really that big of a surprise. December tends to be a month that they release a lot of stuff due to the holidays.
I'm just glad they're getting Odyssey reprinted in another collection. That's important.
Yeah, that's extremely important. Extremely important. All right, next up, actual solicitations for the month of November. Obviously, rounding out the first bit of the solicitations include Dark Knight 3 and the Master Race and Batman Europa, which we talked about last episode, so I'm not going to talk about that. Both of those series will run Dark Knight 3 will run for 8 issues, Batman Europa for 4 issues. But into the main books, Batman and Robin Eternal has 4 issues coming out in November, all of them promising to take the story international with different Robins and other characters like Harper and Cassandra Cain, each investigating different aspects of the case after Batman's greatest secret has torn the Robins apart. In Batman 46, the super heavy story arc continues with Batman finally coming face to face with Mr. Bloom and turning to Bruce Wayne for help. I don't know about you, but that sounds literally like the same thing that just happened in issue 42 or 43 that we read this month. But anyway, in Detective Comics number 46, Jim Gordon's Batman leaves Gotham for the first time to use his detective skills to assist the Justice League. Grayson number 14 finds Dick getting closer to finding out the identity of Agent Zero by searching through the secret lab of former Spiral Leader Nets. Spoiler enters the scene in Batgirl number 46 as Bab deals with what might be a technological goldmine in her civilian life and massive police corruption in her masked life. Also, we'll see Batgirl appear in Batman Superman number 26 to team up with Superman against Vandal Savage. Red Hood and Arsenal try to work out their differences in therapy while also fighting a team of villains in issue number 6. Damian finds himself in battle with the Lundarga, with Talia, Goliath, and his new friend Maya, also known as the Nobody 2, by his side in Robin, Son of Batman number 6. And the Robins deal with another loss and question who among them is worthy of trust in We Are Robin number 6. In other titles, Selina must choose between her family in Gotham City and Catwoman. The gang of Harleys faces geriatric super spy Xena Bendamova. I'm not kidding by that name. Bendamova.
What?
Bendamova.
It's like a James Bond ripoff.
Yes,
almost.
It is. Yes, it is. In Harley Quinn, while Harley's adventures with Power Girl come to an end in the final issue of the miniseries, the secret of who assembled Black Canary's band of misfits is revealed in Black Canary number 6. In Team Books, JLA number 6 continues the all-out war with Rao. Justice League number 46 continues the Dark Side War now that the entire Justice League have become gods. Red Robin goes missing in Teen Titans number 14. Dick Grayson tracks down the Atlantean named Garth while being hunted himself in Titans Hunt number 2. Meanwhile, the Midnight Shift, with Corrigan and Drake presumed dead, enter the final battle for the soul of Gotham City. And the second major story arc of Gotham Academy comes to an end as their investigation points towards Arkham Asylum. Tim takes the battle against Brother Eye to the moon in Batman Beyond, and Batmite's miniseries comes to a close with the whole world annoyed at his attempts to fix things. Other titles also coming out, New Suicide Squad, Earth 2, Society, Batman 66, Injustice Year 4, Batman Arkham Knight, a special one-shot called Batman Arkham Knight Robin Special, Batman Arkham Knight Genesis, and the DC Bombshells. All of those are obvious, most of those, I should say, are actually digital first series. So, not anything super surprising here. Thoughts on at all about anything I talked about?
No, it just seems like nothing strange. No cancellations, no big news, really. I'm interested to see where the Titans Hunt thing goes, but this sounds like a pretty standard month. Nothing weird here.
Next bit of news we have is on August 18th. Brian Buccioletto talked with Newsarama about leaving Detective Comics. We have the interview up on the website. The basic gist of it is that he doesn't at all say that they were kneecapped by Snyder's story or the direction that Snyder went with Batman dying. However, he does say that they did have some ability to kind of come up with some things last minute with the involvement of Joker's daughter and the involvement of the Day of the Dead characters that they had. He talks about that. He also says that he's not going to be coloring for a while. He's going to be doing some other projects. He's not going to be working with Francis anytime in the near future, which is interesting because they've worked together for such a long period of time. He does say that Injustice Year 4 is ending in October, but they are going to be having a Year 5 of Injustice. To me, that is mind-boggling how that series continues to get produced. It must be selling insane numbers on
digital,
digital, because I don't know how that is still getting produced. But anyway, because it's Year 5. I mean, come on. Outside of that, he basically gives a kind of a talk about of Detective Comics 44, which, as you're listening to this, released this past Wednesday. But nothing really newsworthy, honestly, in my opinion. I was actually more interested in the idea of him potentially saying, well, this isn't the direction that we wanted to go, but this is what we were dealt, so this is what we came up with.
Yeah, but I think he's a pro's pro, right?
True, like, very true.
Even if he felt like that, he just doesn't seem like the kind of guy that's going to talk out of school. I mean, he's been in the game a long time. He knows there's no sense in making enemies, right? I think this is what a pro sounds like when he talks.
All right. And then outside of that bit of news, for whatever reason, on August 28th, a slew of websites, including Comic Resources, Newsarama, Comic Vine, IGN, they all posted an interview that day with Tony Daniel talking about Batman and Robin Eternal. Now, for whatever reason, not one of these interviews had any real news in any of them. They did, however, release a couple of new images from the series, some of the preview pages. They did confirm that on Batman Day, the Batman issue that you pick up for free at your comic shop will include a preview similar to what we saw in May with the preview of some of the new series and new directions that were coming in June. We will get a preview of Batman Eternal, which will be its own individual story, not just 5 pages from the upcoming issue. So that was confirmed amongst these interviews. A little bit of art was revealed here and there, but for the most part, there is not a whole lot of news. He was asked a number of questions related to certain characters, and he basically said, "I'm sorry, I can't talk about that right now," or "I'm sorry, I don't know that far into the story." So again, this is another perfect example of someone who has nothing to do with the story being interviewed to talk about the story, because that's not a whole lot of outside of the story is what people actually want to know about. So
nothing to see here.
Now there is a couple of different things to discuss related to some DC specific news, not necessarily Batman news, that we're going to bring up during our discussion in regards to some articles that Bleeding Cool ran, regarding DC basically going belly up, according to them. We'll talk about that when we get to our discussion, but right now I want to jump into our spotlight and cover a number of these books that came out over the past 2 weeks. So there has been, as usual, these last 2 weeks are jam-packed with all kinds of books. One book that we didn't mention last episode, but we did end up getting someone to review it, is Justice League Gods and Monsters. The first three digital chapters were combined in print. We didn't have anybody to review them. We ended up getting someone to review them. The first issue was reviewed by one of our new reviewers, Bill. He gave it 3.5. So I wanted to say that since we didn't mention that in the last one, we do have review of that over on the website. Next up, Batman Arkham Knight number 7, which includes digital chapters number 19 through 21, was reviewed by Ryan. He gave it 3 out of 5. Robin, Son of Batman, number 3, reviewed by Ryan. He gave it 4 out of 5. Over in Robin, Son of Batman, the new Nobody, the Nobody number 2, has been revealed. And as it turns out, her name is Maya. And the character is now teaming up with Robin to actually help him fix the Year of Blood that he, you know, has been working on over the past. So for detailed synopsis of everything, head over to the website and check that out. Black Canary number 3, reviewed by Corbin. This one got 4 out of 5. There was a lot that actually happened in this issue. Kurt Lance is back. They find out that, he's working with one side, not the bad guys that were going after them in issue number 2. There's also a lot of comments on this issue. So I suggest that you check Black Canary out, because not only was it reviewed highly, but there's also a lot of people talking about the issue in general over on the website as well. Next up, Harley Quinn Power Girl number 3, reviewed by Gary. He gave it 4.5. Again, Harley Quinn Power Girl, not going to describe it. If you are interested, head over to the website. Unless one of my fellow co-hosts wanted to describe what's happening in the book, because other than it being a space odyssey with sexually driven villains, there's not a whole lot for me to discuss, because it literally is one of those books where it's so insanely crazy. And I know I say this every single time this book comes up. It's so insanely out there and crazy that I don't know if I could do it any sort of justice by describing what actually happens in the book.
You know what it kind of reminds me of? This is going to sound lunatic fringe, but it kind of reminds me of an Austin Powers movie. Like, it's like a 70s, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's bizarre. It's bizarre. It's so weird. And every month when it comes out, I sit here waiting with bated breath for you to try to sum it up, and you never do. So thanks for that.
I never will.
Yeah, so good. I'll stop looking forward to it then.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely stop looking forward to it.
Okay.
All right. Next up, Justice League number 43, reviewed by Bill. He gave it a total of 4.5 out of 5. Lots of stuff are happening in this. Batman is currently a new god in this title. Superman and Luthor are find themselves in a slave camp attempting to get a mother box. You have the Justice League still reeling from the transformation of Batman into a new god. Batman is finding that his Mobius chair does not contain information that they need about the anti-monitor. There's a lot of stuff going on in this book. So another highly rated book. Definitely check out the synopsis if you are not picking it up. Next up, Secret Six, number 5, reviewed by Jim. He gave it a total of 1 out of 5. This is one of those series where, again, there's a lot of crazy stuff that happens, but it's not in a crazy, enjoyable, fun way. It's just kind of out there. 1 out of 5, it's actually our lowest rated book of the group this time around.
1 out of 5, huh?
Yeah. It was also revealed in this issue that Big Shot, the character that was introduced back in issue number 1, is actually Ralph Dibny, also known as the Elongated Man, and he's not a good guy at all.
Oh.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
He's like a classic JLA.
He has teamed up with he's trying to take out the Riddler because Riddler stole his wife.
So if you think what they did to him was an identity crisis was bad, this out. Perfect. Yeah.
All right. Next up, Justice League Gods and Monsters, number 2, including digital chapters number 4 through 6, reviewed by Bill. He gave it a total of 3 out of 5. Now, just as a heads up, the entire Justice League Gods and Monsters, there was only 3 issues in this series. They combined it all 9 digital chapters that were released in a very, very short amount of time. All 3 issues did release. Bill has reviewed all 3 issues. I mentioned the first one. This is the second one, but all 3 issues. So if you're looking for a synopsis on what happened, it kind of, in some way, sets up what happens in the movie, if you're interested. But the 3 issues are out. They came out 3 weeks in a row they came out. So they're all out. So if you want to know, just read the 3 synopsis and you'll know everything that happened. All right. Next up, Batman 66, number 26, reviewed, including digital chapters number 64 through 65, reviewed by Gary. He gave it 3 out of 5. This deals with Poison Ivy being introduced into the Batman 66 universe. Then we have Batman Arkham Knight Genesis number 1, reviewed by Ryan. He gave it 3 out of 5. This basically sets up the entire backstory of Jason Todd in the Arkham universe. It's actually, in my opinion, I thought it was pretty good. It's a very different story than the Jason Todd story that we know. Part of it is, Peter Tomasi is a little bit better about, doing character driven stories, in my opinion, when it comes to certain characters. So this story, there's a lot more to Jason Todd than just this kid who, you know, is from the streets who tries to steal the wheels off the Batmobile. There's a lot more to it. The kid is actually very, very twisted from the beginning. He actually sells his parents off to sell Maroni, and his parents are killed. It's pretty crazy, but in some ways it's better than the original Jason Todd origin story, in my opinion. So definitely check that one out, in my opinion. Next, We Are Robin number 3, reviewed by Bill. He gave it 4.5 out of 5. There was actually one of the Robins was killed in this issue.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't take long for one of these Robins to basically meet their demise by means of a bomb. So if you want to find out more.
And what else happened?
It was also revealed that behind the scenes, the person running the nest is none other than Alfred, which.
With a hook.
Yes. Thank God that Alfred is actually doing something with his time rather than just dusting the Batcave that nobody's using.
And he's got a hook. So like the hand is gone.
Yeah.
All right. Batgirl number 43, reviewed by Don. He gave it a total of 4 out of 5. Stella, you want to give us a brief synopsis?
Give what a laugh. So it's starting off the Velvet Tiger storyline, which you guys know I love Velvet Tiger. And basically there are some legitimate tiger attacks at Fox Tech. Batgirl goes to investigate. There's some romance flirting between her and Luke, and then there's some jealousy on the side of Kadir. And on the flip side, Batgirl is having some issues with Frankie because Frankie really wants to be out in the field as well, and at one point she actually does go out there, and Alicia and Joe are kind of pushing forward with their marriage, kind of not. It's hard to see. And then at the very end, the very last page, you see Velvet Tiger herself appear.
Moving on, Grayson number 11, reviewed by Corbin. He gave it a total of 4.5 out of 5. In this issue, Dick Grayson figures out who's been framing him and is actually Agent 8. And at the end of the issue, probably the most important thing in the issue is that he actually tells Spiral that he quits.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to deal with this. He calls Bruce and leaves Bruce a message because obviously Bruce Wayne is not picking up his messages, and he says, I'm coming home. I'm coming home.
I'm coming home. Is that
that's exactly what I was thinking as I was saying that. He just leaves that plane as he leaves that plane on the transmission as he gets on his bike and rides towards Gotham City. All right. Next up, Gotham by Midnight, number 8, reviewed by Jim. He gave it a total of 4.5 out of 5. We finally find out, well, it was kind of the big gist of the story was that it was a one-off, case that Jim Corrigan had to work on so that he wasn't around the office. Kate Spencer was talking to Sergeant Rook yet again, trying to figure out what exactly they were going to, why they're going after the midnight shift. The end of the issue, the midnight shift actually gets shut down and Corrigan is taken into custody by one of the internal affairs people. Next up, Harley Quinn, number 19, reviewed by Gary. He gave it 4 out of 5. Part of the Harley Quinn gang has been taken away because, as it turns out, the triplets are actually underage and their mother came for them. Their parents were introduced in this issue. Basically, the gist of it was their parents were upset that they left and the parents came and they were very violent about getting their daughters back from Harley Quinn. And they dealt with the end of Captain Strong. Popeye ripoff. Next up, Justice League number 3, Justice League of America number 3, I should say, reviewed by Ryan. He gave it 2.5. Rao, the god Rao, he continues to make his rounds around the world, healing people, and he actually sets up a part of Africa where he starts allowing people to come to Africa as a way to better their lives by giving them food and water and things like that that they wouldn't have if they went elsewhere. So he's basically setting up some sort of camp for them all to come to. Meanwhile, Batman and Superman are kind of at odds. Superman is saying that Rao is this great person who they should all trust, and Batman, of course, is saying, no, we should not trust him. Not really that big of a surprise there. Next up, Teen Titans number 11, reviewed by Jim. He gave it a total of 4 out of 5. This issue didn't have a whole lot of action, but there was a lot of questions that were answered, and kind of there was obviously some more questions that were asked as well. But there was a lot of character development with Red Robin and Raven, and a lot of the other teams of the Titans, including Beast Boy, Bunker, and Chimera. The Elite team is kind of put to the side in this issue, which was in some ways good because there's not a whole lot. There's not a lot of attachment to any of those characters. Wonder Girl is interesting, but there's not a lot going on with the other characters that is pressing at the moment. I'm still trying to figure out why Manchester Black is still the main character that they've been focusing on for this amount of time, and how he is what's the end game here? Because I don't see it anyway, but got 4 out of 5, so check that out on the website. And then the last issue we have is Justice League Gods and Monsters number 3, which collects digital chapters number 7 through 9. This was reviewed by Bill again, and he gave it 2.5 out of 5. So with that is all of our books. I do want to quickly have Stella mention the editorial that popped up. As you've probably have realized, we have done a pretty good job of having at least one editorial up every episode we've done related to comics. This time around, Stella has returned with TBU Shipper Spotlight.
Yay!
So, Stella, tell us about what this Shipper Spotlight focuses on.
Yeah, absolutely. So, it's an idea or a thought that popped into my head when I was recording Batgirl the Oracle episode 104, and it was stemming from basically the last page of Batgirl number 42, where you find out that Alicia and Joe are going to get married. And this struck me as odd slash a little unfair, because if we all remember back when Dan DiDio said that Bat family characters cannot have happy lives, basically that put the end to the Kate and Maggie relationship, because they were engaged and they were supposed to be married. So it's a travesty, and characters are continually, I think, with this this web of, you know, you can't be happy. They are, what's a good word? Victims to this. And it would also be unfair to the Kate and Maggie characters to have this pair be the first to sort of be a pioneer in the gay marriage for DC Comics. And so I talk about that a little bit. And I also do a side-by-side comparison of the couple, just like their history and what we've seen of them, because really, Kate and Maggie, that was filling the pages of Batwoman when it first started off, and it was just so organically written, and it developed really well. But Alicia and Joe, if you look at the table that I created and poor Dustin had to work with, there's not too much on page. And so it's a little unsettling that you get invested with a couple and that's cut down. And then one that we don't really know about could potentially pioneer something really big for DC Comics. So that's basically what I talk about.
Do you think that some of the reason for that is that the Dio and company just don't think that the characters from the Batgirl comic are as important as Batwoman was? That they don't really care if they get married? Because remember, it wasn't just Batfamily. Like, he wouldn't let Mera and Aquaman get married. The mm-hmm. king and queen of Atlantis.
Yeah, you know? So it's basically so, any hero.
Yeah. Do you think that that's maybe why they're letting them do it in Batgirl? Is they don't
think
it's important?
I don't know that. I don't think that it has to do. Well, I think it has to do with what you're saying, but to a different degree. I think they are supporting characters to, in DC's eyes, a supporting character. So they are supporting characters to Batgirl, who's technically a supporting character to Batman. That's the way they're probably looking at it. So it's like, well, third tier, okay, fine. What does it matter? But I agree with Stella, though. I think I think it's kind of, if they end up actually having a wedding in the book, I'm not saying that they shouldn't, by all means, if they want to and DC wants, let them do it, fine, go right ahead. But I feel as if the characters in Batwoman, they got so gypped. Mm-hmm. So gypped. And I don't know, and a lot of it has to do with, because at the time when that all happened and the explanation of it and Dan DiDio basically saying, well, these characters aren't supposed to be happy. Well. And then I remember how everybody was like, wait, what? Are you kidding?
Yeah. It was bizarre. Yeah.
Because it made no sense. And at the same point, there was no reasons. There is no reason some of these characters can't be happy. Like, just, whatever. I don't want to get too much into that.
Well,
but basically, the gist of it is, if they're going to do a marriage between Alisa and Joe, by all means, let it happen. I don't really care. It doesn't make a difference to me. I do think that if DC makes a big deal about it and says, these characters, you know, hip hip hooray for DC Comics because we're letting these characters get married in our books. It's kind of messed up because they had characters that they could have done something with that they just let fall flat because Dan DiDio and his stupid mandate. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, and characters that would have been meaningful to.
Yes.
I mean, Kate and Maggie had one of the best relationships
absolutely
in the New 52, period. Mm-hmm. It's got nothing to do with the lesbian part at all. You know, they were just, it was well wrote, it was believable. Mm-hmm. And plus, somebody needs to tell Dan DiDio, just because you're married doesn't mean you're happy.
Oh gosh.
I said that in a wrong way. I responded that. I just want to say I'm happy with my marriage. I just want to make sure I say that.
but you know what I'm saying? Like sometimes the marriage stuff that, and the good and bad that comes with it can make for good, interesting stories. You know, like, I don't know. I just never got this decision when it happened. And now with this kind of way of looking back on it through this other relationship, it just seems even more bizarre, you know? So hopefully they'll learn that. What I would like to see is that they've made a mistake and they'll just turn the ship around for Kate and Maggie too. But the problem is they don't have a book anymore. So they'll be in limbo at least until they get their own title.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of sucks.
So with that, that is all of our comic book reviews and our editorials that we have over on the website. So definitely check all of the synopsises out as well as Stella's Shipper Spotlight. For whatever reason, tons of fans love our Shipper Spotlights, specifically Stella's, because it's Stella who's creating them.
Okay.
And other than just being affiliated with it, I really don't have anything to do with it other than I'm the editor for the articles. But I'm just saying, I specifically went to Stella and said, hey, Shipper Spotlights get some crazy traffic on the website, which means there are tons of people out there who are loving Shipper Spotlights.
Yeah.
So keep that traffic coming. And then on top of that, make the post some comments to, you know, discuss things with Stella. And if you have an idea for a future Shipper Spotlight that you'd like Stella to dive in on, leave your comments and suggestions on that article. And, you know, she'll be notified whenever you guys leave comments. So
absolutely.
With that, we're going to go into our listener Q&As.
Boy, did you get a wrong number. and leave your message at the sound of the shriek.
No, please, don't!
Ah! All right, so on to our listener Q&As. The very first one we have is from Gary. He says, great podcast, guys. Love to hear the passionate discussion. Maybe Section 8 can take Joker's daughter. They are looking for a new member. Section 8 being a comic that's outside of the Batman universe, but hey, by all means, if we can get her out of the Batman universe, let's send her to Section 8.
Good with me.
The Bat Family situation is odd. I know they are focusing on stories over continuity, and there are some cool encounters with Bruce running the local youth center, but it all seems like just a bunch of one-off scenes. Where is this going? And Damian and Dick's non-reaction to what happens to Bruce is starting to feel really weird. Come on, DC. Let's get it together. Yes, I agree. We mentioned this on the last episode. The non-reaction from everybody in the Bat family to...
It's very strange.
It doesn't make any sense. None of it makes any sense. I mean, like, other than they're just... The only explanation is that somehow it happened in that 3-month time frame before Gordon suited up in the suit, because we know 3 months had passed. But at the same time, we don't know exactly how much time has passed from the time that Bruce died in the cave until they found his body. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, he moved on with his life. So we have to assume that the reaction from the Bat family had to happen in that 3-month time frame some point before issue number 41 picked up. And that's the only real explanation. And we're just not seeing it because it happened off panel. As we all know, things like this, especially significant things, should never happen off panel. Unless, of course, your name is Scott Snyder and you don't want to write the Bat Family.
Okay. Easy.
Okay.
All right. A little harsh. The reality is we'll probably get to see all the reactions in 4 months. Or 5 months, right?
5 months? What's in 5 months?
Another issue that Scott Snyder's writing.
Like, it won't be in Snyder's book. And here's why. Because when I was perusing all of the interviews with Tony Daniel, one of the interviews, can't remember which one off the top of my head, mentions how is Damian going to be involved in the story? How is Dick going to be involved, and how are they going to deal with the fact that Bruce is no longer Batman? Will we see Jim working, you know, counterintuitively against what Dick Grayson is doing? You know, how does Dick react to Jim being in the suit? Is this going to be shown? And he basically said, as I said earlier, there was nothing that really, he didn't really say anything newsworthy. He basically was like, I don't really know how far the story is, but they don't really come, Jim and Dick don't really come head to head at any point that I've been aware of so far. So even in Batman and Robin Eternal, when you have all of these Bat family members and you also have Batman missing, you still don't have them interacting with the overall Snyder main story that everyone is following. So Eternal, once again, will follow its own little thing up until towards the end when they launch some new series tying in or creative new directions with certain series like they did, you know, when Batman Eternal was halfway over and they did Catwoman and Batgirl. So forth and so on. It seems like it's the exact same thing. It's going to be doing its own thing, even though it is this huge thing that's happening in the Batman universe. It is, again, what it is, because that's just how whatever DC. In some ways, I almost feel like Snyder has said multiple times that Tynion is more of the guy in charge this time around. He said multiple times for the first volume that Tynion was really the guy behind everything, and he was just kind of like helping put story ideas together. And I almost feel as if what would happen if Tynion had the Snyder power per se, like what would happen? Because Tynion, you know, he obviously wants to use all these characters, as we've seen in, you know, Batman Eternal. So my question is, how would things be different if, and we have to assume to a degree some of the changes that happened, you know, with the introduction of new series and the directions that they took certain characters, like with Catwoman and Batgirl, we have to assume that maybe not to the full extent. Like, I'm not going to say that Tynion was the mastermind behind the new Batgirl direction or anything, but we did see Batgirl kind of take her, like, go from Gail Simone's crazy, obsessed, violent Batgirl to, you know, the Cameron Stewart, Brandon Fletcher Batgirl, a little bit more lighthearted. that transition kind of happened in Batman Eternal and not so much in Batgirl, in my opinion. Stella, would you like to refute that?
I will partially agree with you. I know what you're coming from because of the whole, I mean, Jason was the person that sort of kept her from going over the edge, which was, I think we all enjoyed that. Yeah. And she realized in the pages of Eternal that she was really going too far and she was almost becoming Batman. So I think there was some change within there. But I think I still feel like the big change that really reinvented her character was coming into the pages of Batgirl.
Oh,
but
I
think it was that gradual evolution, I think, to that. But then, bam, you have Batgirl 35. We've got this new Barbara Gordon. That's
exactly
much better.
Yeah, and I think it's the same thing to a degree with Catwoman. Catwoman was going from this horrible, horrible run in her own series to being brought into Batman Eternal, kind of being melded into a different direction. And then Catwoman, you know, the series took a different direction with new creative team. And the direction in some ways started its roots in Batman Eternal. I feel like that happened in for both Batgirl and Catwoman. I'm not saying that either one of those characters, everything that changed was directly related to Batman Eternal, but we started to see the roots of what was going to happen in that book. But that being said, I almost feel like Tynion gets the characters overall better than Snyder. And I know Ed is going to have my head for that comment.
No. Listen, I'm under no illusion that the only character that Scott Snyder has a, and in my opinion, excellent grasp on is Bruce Wayne. Right? He obviously doesn't even, like, acknowledge Damian's existence half the time. Right?
I don't think he's ever acknowledged his existence.
Page one, that's it. I mean, listen, you're not gonna, I think that if you were looking to create a deep world story, I don't think there's any doubt that Tynion would probably be, I don't know if Tynion would do a better job. I mean, if you put a gun to Snyder's head and told him to write one, but there's no doubt to me that Tynion's more interested in writing that story. Does that make any sense? Like,
yes.
I think this is what Tynion likes to write, is these kind of big character pieces, which are great. I love them. And I think Scott Snyder likes to write the more hardcore Bruce Wayne, you know what I'm saying, type things. And he likes to play in that little sandbox. So I think actually it's good because I think the world has room for both these guys to write stories. And I think you need Tynion to bounce about. If Snyder's going to run this Bruce Wayne and his new character cast only, then you need Tynion to play with all the other characters so they're being played with. Does that, you know what I'm saying? Like they're almost kind of balance each other out in a way.
Yes, and I agree completely with that. All right, next up we have a comment from Mark. He says, I've been listening to your comic podcast for a while now and decided to send in an email. I really enjoy looking at comic sales and DC numbers have been down for some time. Marvel is killing it with Secret Wars, and I feel that it will propel their all-new, all-different line in September and November. I feel like Convergent not only was meh, but also slowed the momentum for DC Comics. Do you think DC will get a bump in October, November with the Frank Miller Master Race, Batman and Robin Eternal, and all the Darkseid War tie-ins? I think that Batman vs. Superman Suicide Squad movie will give a bump in sales when DCEU finally gets launched. Sales for Suicide Squad as of now are meh, and other Justice League numbers are low, especially Green Lantern and Aquaman. Does a change in the front office need to happen for DC? Lastly, I've really been enjoying the new Deathstroke series. Tony S. Daniel's art has really reinvented Slade Wilson, and I like the approach to make him young. He's much more relatable now than the Kyle Higgins run. Have a great week. All right, so a couple things here. First off, I don't have a whole lot to say about the Deathstroke series because I honestly haven't really been reading the Deathstroke series. I'll be completely honest with that. We don't cover it on the website, so it's not something I really pay attention to. And I have admitted multiple times in the past, I don't really pay attention to anything DC that's not part of the Batman universe and the books that we mention here on the podcast.
Well,
that being said, there are obviously other books out there that are good that I don't read. There are things over at Marvel that I'm sure Stella will attest are good too that I don't want to ever have to talk about here on our podcast. That being said, talking about some of your other questions, when it comes to sales, we've talked about sales before too, and sales is something that really interests me for a period of time. I want to say it was about a year, probably 2 or 3 years ago, there's an article that I wrote every single month detailing the sales of all of the Batman Universe books, showing the percentage and change of sales, and then showing which books were in that range of being canceled. Something that's really interesting to me, I don't have the time to keep up with doing an article every single month as much as I had the time in the past. But that being said, I still pay attention to the sales charts, here and there. We actually, before we were recording this, we were talking about sales of certain books and things like that. It's something that I'm interested in. But in regards to Marvel and Marvel killing it, I can't speak as to what they're, you know, what they're doing over there, you know, what's super successful, what's working, other than just looking at the sales charts and saying they've got some good sales going on over there. Comparing Convergence to the Secret Wars thing, I think is like comparing apples and oranges. Because going into Convergence, we all knew, well, okay, I wouldn't say all of us, because Terry did write an article saying he was excited for it. But Convergence was not something that I was looking forward to in any way, shape, or form. Terry ultimately retracted his statement
in a later
article stating that he was disappointed greatly by Convergence. And it was so funny because when Terry posted the article saying that he was excited for Convergence, it even got a retweet from Dan DiDio of all people, because I guess nobody really cared about
somebody
Convergence.
Said they're happy. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and props for that. But at the same time, I was not looking forward to Convergence. I told everybody I wasn't looking forward to Convergence, and that's why I took 2 months off of the podcast so that I wouldn't have to worry about Convergence. Now, given I still had to edit the reviews over on the website for the Convergence books, and that was a headache as itself because I didn't want to have anything to do with Convergence. But we made sure we got the Batman stuff up there for, you know, the viewers of the website and, you know, the readers and the listeners. We wanted that stuff. Ed did a great job of taking control of what was going on. And we had Don and Josh Paul jump on and help out with the Comicast as well. But in general, Convergence, I think we all agree it had some interesting stories here and there, but for the most part, it was a giant waste of time.
Fell flat. Absolutely. As the guy who had to, the new guy, by the way, that got stuck doing it, it was.
New guy? Yeah, new wait, guy? How long three, have you been here?
Technically, I'm the newest of the three.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess if that's the case, we can call you the new guy forever, because I don't know when's
true.
The next time we're going to be bringing somebody else in.
It's you, Dustin.
Yeah.
Yeah, when they replace me.
It's in the works. No, Convergence felt like running uphill carrying rocks. You know?
Wow. Okay,
like, it was brutal. I mean, there was some, and it went on. I think the problem too, and I really, really believe this. The first month was fine for me, but the second month was, you know what I'm saying? Like it, if they had contained it to 1 month, 2 months was too much. It was just too much. Such bad memories. Go on.
While he grabs a Kleenex to wipe his tears away, let's get into your next question. As far as sales getting a bump, come October, November with Batman and Robin Eternal, The Master Race, Batman Europa, Darkseid War. Maybe they'll get a sales bump. I'm sure Dark Knight Master Race will sell a good chunk of issues. I'm sure of it. I don't know. You know, one thing, you know, we've talked about variant covers more times than I care to remember. We were talking about this before the podcast. I noticed in the solicitations for November, you know, in the solicitations, they always list all of the variant, the ratios for variant covers. The Looney Tune variant covers are just basically, one for one variant cover. It doesn't matter which one you order.
That's become an alternate cover, by the way.
Yeah, it's just an alternate cover. It's not really a variant. It's literally just an alternate. There's no special, you know, you don't have to order so many. It's just basically, if you order 10, you can get 5 of the Looney Tune variants or whatever. But for Dark Knight 3 Master Race, they actually have a 1 in 5,000 variant cover. Now, 1 in 5,000, let me put that in perspective. Now, remember, I've discussed this before, the 1 in 100 variant covers. They were super difficult. They started out, I want to say back, the first one that I actually remember them coming out with was Batman Incorporated number 1, the first series. They came out with a 1 in 100. It was a black and white, I believe, by Frank Quietly. And when I went online and tried to find one of these variant covers, because I am the completist that I am, it was practically impossible to find this cover, because the variant cover was going for upwards of $300 online.
Ooh.
And I'm never going to spend $300 for...
Is that what they were going for? Three bills, huh?
Yeah, it was like three, it was about $300. And when you work out the math, it's because the $300 that it was going for was because you had to buy, or a comic retailer had to order 100 issues in order to get that one variant cover, which means you take 100 normal priced issues at $3 a piece, times it by 100, and you get $300. That's where the money comes from, because they basically have to make up for the fact that they bought an extra 100 copies, or, you know, extra whatever number of copies to get that one variant. So that's why that price is. Now, to put in perspective, a 1 in 5,000 would mean you have to basically spend, a place has to spend, because this isn't a $3 comic, let's just remember. This is actually a $5 comic, if I remember
true.
Correctly.
True. Yeah, it's gonna be a good point.
So if it's $4.99, a comic retailer has to actually spend $25,000 on one issue in order to get this one variant cover.
That's ridiculous.
So just put in perspective of how much this one variant cover issue will be, not to mention how rare it will be, because how many comic retailers out there actually have 25 grand to spend on one comic? One specific title, I should say. Because they're obviously going to have 5,000 copies of this one, which means that one copy of the original $5 issue will be worth nothing.
Well, let's think about this.
Absolutely nothing.
Hold on, let's think about this. Let's think this through. And this is another question the guy's asking. Do we think it may bump in sales? How many copies do we think that DKR will sell? That will tell us how many of these 1 in 5,000 will exist, right?
True.
So what do we think it'll sell? 150, 200, somewhere in there?
Well, yeah, I would say I would be conservative in saying about 150.
So what's 150 divided by 5,000? Who's smart? Stella, you're smart. What is it?
Well, 150,000 issues
divided by 5
would be 30. So you have 30 possible ones. But keep in mind that you're not going to have a retailer out of the 30 potential issues of this variant cover. You're not going to have – not everybody buys all of their comics from 30 retailers. And I don't know very many local comic shops that are as big of a chain that could actually do an order that large.
But even on the high side, you're looking at maybe 30 of these being out there. Right?
Maybe.
Honestly,
I would put money on it that there will be less than 10 of them.
What do you think this will go for on eBay? Just out of curiosity, I mean, you're, what, 500, 600, somewhere in there? Maybe more?
Oh God, no, are you kidding? If somehow this actually happens, and there's a retailer out there who actually is able to spend this much money on ordering comics, because keep in mind, when you're a retailer, you have to pay up front for your comics. So, you have to pay $25,000 ahead of time for this one issue. So I would imagine that this one issue is going to be upwards of $20,000 to $25,000, hands down.
And you
honestly, I almost feel like somehow I should send an email scheduled to myself come November to actually check eBay and see how much it's going for, because I guarantee you it's going to be over 20 grand. I don't know who in the right mind is going to pay 20 grand for that. But I guarantee you it won't be less than 20 grand.
20 large. I mean, I'm not saying you're wrong, but that puts it in a whole different class of people want to pay that. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Like, well, I mean, like there won't be that. The thing is, the one plus side of it is, now, when you have the 1 in 100 issues, I mean, like, obviously there's a lot of money, like they can go upwards of $300. To a degree, there's still going to be, retailers who can order 100 copies. Most retailers in certain areas, like the retailer that I used to buy my comics, they were a chain of 4 stores, so they could potentially buy 100 copies of the same issue. It's entirely possible.
But 5,000?
Yeah, but 5,000. I mean, like, even there's a chain in Chicago, Graham Crackers, they have locations all over Chicagoland. I want to say like 15 locations, but even they, there's no way that they're gonna have 5,000 issues amongst 15 stores. That's that's a lot of issues over, you know, over that many stores. So, I mean, like, I don't know. I honestly feel as if, you know, if you were one of the people like me who got completely turned off from variants because of the dumb 1 in 100s, the 1 in 5,000s are probably going to make you like want to just blow up DC.
Interesting. I don't know.
I do want to point out that, in response to DC having a 1 in 5,000, Marvel has decided to jump on the bandwagon by offering a 1 in 4,999 sketch variant covers for Deadpool number 1. The sketch cover is going to be done by Dave Johnson. It's called the Candy Sketch Variant, which kind of parodies some of the advertisements for Twix that DC had in some of their books lately, the print copies, that is. So, Marvel refuses to be outdone in any way, shape, or form by DC. That's that. All right, getting back to our comments.
Other thing that I need to touch on, I actually read the first trade of Tony S. Daniel's Deathstroke. It's not bad. It's actually pretty good. The art's, like, I've always liked his art. His writing, especially on Detective Comics, was... But, actually, it's really good. And there's a 4-issue story arc in there with Harley Quinn and Batman that, if you're looking for a Harley Quinn story that's, like, in continuity and not the Pamela and Gray stuff, which is great, but it's actually pretty good. It's worth checking out.
See? It is Bat Samurai. Yeah.
It, sometimes it is. It was on our list of books that I mentioned that you should check out, but it wasn't anything we had reviewed because we didn't have the people to review all the other books, which I'm still looking for someone to jump on the bandwagon and become a comic book reviewer for books that are not normal TBU books. Almost every month there's some book that a Batman character ends up being focused on or features in another book. Perfect example, Justice League 3001. Batman is not always in that book, but sometimes he is. So sometimes it needs to be reviewed, but it doesn't need to be reviewed every single month. Deathstroke. There was 4 issues of Deathstroke that had Batman and Harley Quinn. Those need to be reviewed because Batman and Harley Quinn are in them. Those kind of things, but it's not something that happens every single time, and you have no idea when it's going to happen until basically the month of. So if you are interested in reviewing DC books that have TBU characters and a very sporadic schedule, make sure you email me at tbu@thebatmanuniverse.net.
Would be very much a roving reporter.
Yes, it would be. Your final comments about does a change in the front office need to happen for DC? We're actually going to talk about that in our discussion that we're going to talk about in a little bit, so we'll get to that in a little bit. Next up, Scott says, hi, love the show, great discussion as always. After listening for the past couple of weeks about the misuse of Tim Drake and the current Teen Titans run, I was wondering if you could recommend a good run of the Titans for someone who has never read any to pick up in trade form. Keep up the great work. You guys are the reason I'm reading so many more DC comics. Thanks, Scott. So, Scott, thanks. I appreciate your great comics. I'm glad that we are pimping out DC's products and there's people who are actually picking them up. That being said, as far as a good Tim Drake Teen Titans story.
Come on. Jeff Johns Teen Titans. Gotta be, right?
It pretty much has to be. I mean, Tim Drake in Teen Titans, there was not a whole lot to go off of. To be honest, I mean, a lot of the Teen Titans stuff that's really good is Dick Grayson, not Tim Drake.
No.
But Jeff Johns' Teen Titans run, it's funny that happens because Tony Daniel was actually the artist on the run for a time there as well, with Jeff Johns as the writer. I would suggest checking that out. There's a decent amount of trades for that. I can't think of any off the top of my head, but if you look up Jeff Johns' Teen Titans run, basically any of that stuff is really good.
I would also say Young Justice, which leads into Teen Titans. Those aren't really collected in trade, though, so they're going to be hard for you to find. But if you can, just really fun and great storytelling. And then sort of the tone gets a little darker when you get into Titans. But the team members that are on the Titans are affiliated a little bit in Young Justice, so it gets you started. And Tim's on that team.
Yeah, Young Justice publication-wise came out before Jeff Johns' Teen Titans.
Right, right.
And that's part of the reason why the members of Young Justice weren't on the Titans at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were still focusing on some of the other characters. All right.
The first trade, by the way, because it's literally right in front of my face at this bookshelf right next to my desk, is Volume 1, A Kid's Game. Mm-hmm. And there is also a Jeff Johns omnibus. And if you're going to get them all, it's the cheaper way to go. You can get it for like $85 if you shop smartly out there. So
yes, because some of those trades will cost you at least 10, bucks, yeah. 10, 15 bucks a piece. So, all right. Next up, Doug says, another great podcast, guys and girl. I wanted to first talk about something that I thought y'all were going to touch on during the podcast, but never did. It's about when Alfred is trying to fill in Bruce on the events of his life, more specifically the murder of Thomas and Martha Wayne. When Alfred is explaining to Bruce about the importance of this event being the catalyst of him becoming Batman, Bruce tells Alfred that the most he could feel for that boy is empathy. Since this is the driving force for the crusade Bruce sets upon, how do you think the lack of this emotion will drive Bruce to becoming Batman again? Lastly, I know y'all have talked about it many times before, and Scott Snyder has even acknowledged it, but the fact that Snyder has a hard time writing Damian, or any other member of the Bat family for that matter, shouldn't exclude him from even acknowledging their existence. The death of Bruce should have a greater ripple through the Bat family. Even if he didn't want to explicitly add them to the story, he should have made some reference somewhere. I just find it odd, with Damian especially, that he rarely ever acknowledges their existence. Again, great work and keep it up. All right. So relating the lack of emotion that Bruce has of his parents. I mean, the fix for this is going to be something to do with that cloning machine, the memory machine. There's no reason for them to even have brought it up unless, of course, that was not going to be the fix. Who knows when the fix is going to happen? The fact that the thing is, you know, when Alfred's explaining what happened to the parents, he says he doesn't have the emotions that, you know, he should have because he doesn't feel as if they were his parents because they were never his parents. He doesn't have them. Alfred can only explain it to a certain degree. So in my mind, the only way that it will get fixed is if he has those emotions basically put back through all of the memories that he has. But who knows exactly how that's going to work, considering that memory machine is not actually functionable. So something will have to happen in order to get that thing working and somehow extract the memories from Bruce's brain that no longer has them. So I don't know how else they'll explain it, but at the same time, I don't know that there is another way to explain it other than just, you know, chalking it up to, I don't know. Who knows? Maybe it'll be something that happens off panel. God help us.
Yeah, I bet. I hate off panel land. That's one of those things that needs to happen on screen.
Yeah, it does need to happen. Yeah. And then in relation to the reactions, we kind of talked about that in a couple questions before this, but the relation, like my hope is that, you know, Snyder has said multiple times he doesn't want to work with Damian. And the reason being is because he has a child. He has a son. He has two sons, actually. His kids are, you know, the age that Damian, or around the age that Damian, he has a hard time thinking about writing a child his own son's age in these weird, dark stories that he's writing. Completely understandable. Completely understandable. But at the same time, how many times have we seen the backups in Batman? We're not seeing them now, but how many times have we seen backups in the pages of Batman where it was written by somebody else? That would be a perfect example of where you would be telling these stories that aren't necessarily associated with what Snyder's writing. Have someone like Tinian, who has no problem writing these other Bat Family characters, have them writing the reactions in the backup. That's not going to happen, because if it was going to happen, it would have already happened, but it's not going to happen anytime soon, so we're not going to see that. But it is a missed opportunity, because that would have been a place that it would have made the most sense. Each member of the Bat family has, you know, a short 5-page thing at the back of the book, takes a little bit of page count off of Greg Capullo's shoulders. DC can jack up the price to $5 because that's what they want to do anyway. Next up, Mary says, hi all. Thank you for another entertaining podcast, everyone. There could be some interesting stories coming out of this concept of Batman being dead and Bruce having amnesia. If Bruce has amnesia, that means no one knows Dick is still alive. It would be interesting, but I doubt they will go in this direction for Dick to see the corporate GCPD Batman as doing a disservice to the idea of what Batman stood for and take over the cowl himself. This would upset the people in charge of Batman, who are most likely protecting their own interests at the expense of the people in general. There would also be the mystery for Barbara, Julia, and Alfred of figuring out who is Batman. They would never even suspect Dick. My theory is that Bruce does not really have amnesia, and it's all an elaborate plot to uncover something shady within Powers Technology. Who all is in on it would be the real question. Julia, Dick, Damian, I'm pretty sure Alfred is not. it will be just another of the growing list of secrets Bruce is keeping from everyone. If he does, in fact, have amnesia, I'm predicting that he'll get it back at the circus. They have been forecasting this pretty strongly, and we all know something bad is going to happen. After all, it's a circus in Gotham. Thanks, Mary. All right, so
Fair point about bad things happening at circuses in Gotham.
That's true. But two things I want to talk about here. The first one is the idea of Dick coming back and just taking up the role of Batman. That would be a really cool, awesome story. It would be. And, you know, the conflict of seeing Bruce or Dick versus Jim would be awesome, because eventually it would be revealed to Jim that this is the former Robin and it was the Batman that he's worked with in the past and blah, blah, blah. And it could be a really cool story. Snyder, I don't know that would be the best story for him, though. In the pages of Detective Comics, it could work out perfectly.
Or even Batman and Robin Eternal.
Yeah, Batman and Robin Eternal could also work. But like you said, it probably is not going to happen just because it's just not likely to happen. As far as the theory of the amnesia, who knows? I'm not going to speculate any more than we already have as far as that. I will say that I don't think he's going to get back at the circus. The circus has only been referred to in the pages of Detective Comics, which is not Snyder's main story. So I highly doubt that Bruce is just going to go to the circus in Detective Comics and get his memories back. If that was the case, then I can't believe Snyder is actually going that direction and letting some other writer write one of the main components of his story. But I don't see that happening. But something is going to happen at the circus, even though we only have one issue left. Or nothing might happen because there's only one issue left. We'll have to wait and see.
Well, I mean, I'm sure something will happen. I just don't know if it's going to have broad-reaching implications. Because, like you said, you have to believe that was going to happen in Snyder's book.
Last but not least, Jerry says, love another great episode. I'm a BTO listener and wanted to know what the TBU comic podcast hosts thought about the Dick Corey Babs relationship. So, I don't know if somebody named Jerry is actually named Stella. I'm not sure. I'm going to say it's probably not.
Yeah, I promise I didn't do that.
I know it's not because I can see the emails on the dashboard of the actual the admin side of the website. But I'll say this. Stella, give a brief synopsis for those who aren't listening to BTO about what exactly everyone's talking about, and then we'll give our thoughts.
Yeah, Jerry, you opened a can of worms here, because this is a big thing that I like to fight about. And they're basically, for people, you know, not in the know, Dick Grayson and Barbara Gordon had sort of some on again, off again romance. There was, flirtation when he was younger and she was much older than he was in Batman Family. And then when Crisis happened and sort of their ages got closer, during No Man's Land was sort of when they started their relationship. And at one point they were engaged right before, he went off post Infinite Crisis. But throughout his tenure in Teen Titans for a very long time, and he was even engaged to Coriander, aka Starfire. So this is, I mean, there are shippers out there, they're, you know, that really are diehard for different fandoms. But there is this group of people that are either totally for Babs and Dick or totally for Coriander and Dick. And Tom Paneris is one of those that really likes Dick and Corey, and I will fight against him. But I actually have a debate in person with Tom Paneris on the most recent Batgirl the Oracle. But, I mean, there's just not enough time in this podcast for me to go over all the things I think about this.
Yes, there's not enough time. So I would strongly suggest that everyone check out Batgirl the Oracle.
Thank you.
Okay, well, what I'm for is I'm Dick Babs all the way.
Yeah!
That's me.
Failure of life.
And I'm not going to sit here and argue it because that's a whole nother discussion for another time. But
yeah,
I'm team Babs. So
Corey, no, 100%.
Okay. Yeah. Well, then we definitely have a debate for some time in the future.
Yeah, if we ever want to get to this, I'm totally ready to get into this.
If we ever get to an actual discussion that does not involve us discussing
Scott Snyder
news stories or listener Q&As. That is on our giant list of things we will talk about. All right. So with that, we're going to jump into our discussion for this episode. I do want to quickly mention that, of course, we always end up doing this where put together a good chunk of discussion points that we're going to talk about. For the first thing we're going to discuss, just so that we don't run out of time, is Ed came to me and said, you know, there's a lot of listeners who have said to us, you know, give us some recommendations on books. I'm a new reader, or I've started reading with the New 52. What are some books that I should pick up? So Ed came to me and said, maybe we should give a list of books that we think are good. So as you're reading this, there is actually a list published under the comic editorial section of the website that you can check out that has a list of 10 different graphic novels / trades that you should check out, or a series of trades, basically stories, but in some collected form. You can check out the entire list. The intent was for us to discuss this list. It's Ed's list of the top 10.
It's definitely mine. You won't confuse it with Dustin's, I don't think.
Yes. Yep. And at some point, maybe I'll make a list. I don't know. No Man's Land would be on the top, but I did notice that it is on Ed's list as well. So real quick, I want Ed to just run down his top 10, and then we'll go from there.
Okay, 10 is Batman the Cult. 9 is Court of Owls. 8, Gotham by Gaslight. 7, Arkham Asylum, A Serious House on Serious Earth. 6, Batman Year One. 5, Batman the Long Halloween. 4, Death of the Family. 3, No Man's Land. 2, The Dark Knight Returns. And number 1, Hush.
So, it's a good list. There's a couple books that I would take off and put on, but nonetheless, the entire list is over on the website so if you are one of our listeners who has been asking us for recommendations, I know that we have given recommendations multiple times. You know, I pretty much always suggested reading No Man's Land, and Stella always, you know, says read the Brian Q. Miller Batgirl stuff. But this way, there's a list out there that we can refer you to, over on the website, to check out, because they are obviously these are more Batman specific. They're not necessarily the allies, but they are Batman specific. That doesn't mean there aren't allies in the stories, but that is a list for you guys to check out. And, you know, at a future time, Stella will put together a list of her top 10, and I'll put together a list of my top 10. And that way you guys can kind of see at least 30 options no more than 30 options of different stories you guys can check out if you want to find out more about the Batman universe.
I will say one quick thing about this, and that is this. Most of these, I think most people have read. The one that I think that probably people haven't, if you haven't, please go do it, is Batman the Cult.
Yeah.
Although I have it at 10, I don't think it's as famous as some of these other stories on here, you know? But it's really good. If you haven't read Batman the Cult, I seriously, you can get it cheap in trade now for like 10 bucks, right? And I got off Comixology, it's like $1.50 an issue on there. It's 4 issues. So if you haven't read it, please, it's good.
Is that in Elseworlds?
No. That's, this is the origin of Deacon Blackfire.
Oh, okay.
And actually it's kind of bizarre because it's the only quote unquote great story, except maybe if you argue where Jason Todd died, where Jason Todd's the Robin. It's very rare to have Jason Todd as the Robin in any of what we consider the great stories. And this is, if you want to read something with Jason Todd pre-Red Hood, this is the only great story I can think of him being in, really.
All right. So, like I said, comic editorials, check that out over on the site. Now, the intent was that was actually going to be our main discussion, but then something came up towards the end of last week that really needs to be discussed. There was an article that posted up over at Bleeding Cool. Now, if you're not familiar with Bleeding Cool is, I don't know how to put this politely in any way. Now, I don't mind there's different aspects of different things. When you are looking for news related to movies, sometimes you'll go to movie specific places. Sometimes you'll go to, sites that will give you like, set pictures of the sets and things like that that aren't necessarily official, but you're looking for the rumors. Okay. It's the same thing when it comes to the comic book world. When it comes to the comic book world, you've got Comic Book Resources, Newsrama, IGN, Comic Vine, a lot of other smaller companies, but those are the big ones out there that, you know, are basically the official news source for a lot of comic stuff when it comes to whatever comic book stuff there is. Okay. But Bleeding Cool, on the other hand, they're not necessarily officially recognized by, you know, the publishers, because they do a lot of rumors type stuff, inside information that, you know, the companies don't necessarily want to be talked about, things like that. They are, I wouldn't say they are a rumor site, but they do post rumors about certain things. They do try to connect the dots when it comes to certain things, but there's plenty of websites out there that do this. Now, they just have a better, they have a better time at doing this because they've been doing it for so long. Back in the day, I don't know because I haven't been paying attention. I remember back when I started the website slash podcast back in 2008, one of the websites out there was called Ain't It Cool News, ran by Harry Knowles. And it was a big website for a lot of scoop stuff related to movies. That's where you went. Bleeding Cool was always the place where you went for scoop stuff related to the comic books. They do a good job. Before the New 52 was announced, they actually had made a point to point out and list articles. They had a bunch of articles talking about the New 52 before DC actually officially announced it, things like that. So they've been around the block for a long time. They have a pretty decent record of getting things correct when it comes to this because generally they have a lot of inside information when it comes to things. That all being said, they posted a series of articles over the last couple days of the last week of August dealing with some things at DC Comics, specifically dealing with the fact that DC Comics is going to be posting a loss of about $2 million for 2015. And basically, the projected figures have them down $2 million. They talk about how the sales from Convergence weren't very great. They talk about how the DCU initiative that happened in June hasn't taken off as well as they hoped it would. And in general, Marvel is kind of kicking their butts. And on a lot of different fronts. Now, what the article fails to really take in consideration is that the entire company moved from one coast to the other coast and had to move everything and everybody, and there's a lot of money that goes into moving a large company. Now, DC has about 300, 400 employees, something like that, that were in New York that moved or, you know, left and got severance packages because they didn't move. All that is part of that $2 million. So the headline of DC has lost $2 million this year is not really that big of a deal in the long scheme of things because the whole reason they moved or the whole reason they're down money is mostly because of the move and the fact that they had to let people go, cut severance checks for certain people because they were moving. So I didn't see that mentioned anywhere in the article, so I feel like that needs to be mentioned up front. But in general, sales have kind of been sluggish for DC. You know, they're not amazing. We were talking about sales numbers before the podcast, and there's certain books that are, you know, that get a lot of credit, but there's not insanely great or amazing. Well, there's two specific books that a lot of people have attributed the DCU initiative that happened in June to happening. Batgirl and Harley Quinn. Both of these titles have gone in a very different direction than what the characters were and what they were doing before they had new directions. Bleeding Cool is very quick to use this stupid verb that they've created themselves called backgirling. They want to backgirl titles, by basically taking a title and putting it in a different direction and making it either a lighter tone or something very different than what it normally is. I don't like the term backgirling because the thing is not every book needs to be a lighter tone or be a little bit fun book. They just need a different direction. That all being said, the main gist of this is that when for creators out there who, or for anybody in the industry who has said that Batgirl and Harley Quinn are the main reasons behind this, I have a hard time believing that for two reasons. Batgirl, it is a very, you know, it's a good selling book, but, Ed told me before the, episode started that it's around like 30, 35K.
33,000 last report.
Yeah. So last report for July, 33,000. Now that's nothing to scoff at. That's actually a pretty decent numbers for a comic book. But at the same time, that's not amazing sales. That's not, you know, 100K. That's not even 75K. That's, you know, it's good sales. It's good average sales. To put that in perspective, the sales numbers for Batgirl pre-New 52 with Stephanie Brown, during its peak, it was around like 25, 26. So it's not even, it's not even as if it was that far off by any means. I mean, like, honestly, you could have a book drop 10,000, which we'll talk about in a second here, in 1 month. It's not really unheard of. So that being said, Batgirl is not a book that you really need to put the entire initiative on the shoulders of what happened in Batgirl. Harley Quinn, on the other hand, has had some ridiculous sales. Harley Quinn, there was issues of Harley Quinn that were selling upwards of like 60,000, 70,000 issues. And it was insane. Harley Quinn was blowing up and everybody was buying it. And there's honestly no real reason behind it. You know, Batgirl selling well, getting a lot of, you know, critical acclaim and things like that. It's good, but there's not this enormous amount of people who are actually buying the book that normally aren't buying a Batgirl book. It's not that crazy. Now, Harley Quinn, on the other hand, is one of those books where it's very hard to understand how that book is selling upwards of 60 to 70,000 issues per month. Because most people who are buying books, that means that everybody who's buying Batman is buying Harley Quinn. That, to put it in perspective, I mean, Batman sells more than Harley Quinn, but I mean, like, that's realistically where it was at for a while. Harley Quinn, there was 1 month where Harley Quinn was actually in the top 10 for the month.
Yeah.
Which was like, wait, what? Harley Quinn is in the top 10? Now, as much as I am not a super huge fan of the title, they have gone in a different direction. I've attributed it to more of Harley, they basically made Harley Quinn the Deadpool of the DC universe in a way.
Hmm.
I mean, that's, in my opinion, that's the way to put it, because they tried to make the character very different, very zany, and I attribute that to what Marvel does with Deadpool to a degree. I don't read Deadpool, it's just what I know of Deadpool. That being said, the interesting thing about Harley Quinn is, in June, when that first issue came out with DCU, which was not necessarily anything new, I believe Ed said it had 66,000.
You're talking about June's Harley Quinn number?
Yeah. Talk to June to July.
June Harley Quinn, 68,243. July, 59,947. It's almost a 10,000 issue drop from June to July. And normally when you see a swing that big, it's a creative change, or, you know what I'm saying? Or something has ended. But a 10,000 issue swing is humongous, and I don't really know why we would have it on this title, because there hasn't been any major changes that I'm aware of. So this was a big swing, yeah.
Yeah, it was a big swing, and in some ways, there are some people who are raising a red flag saying, wait a second. One of the books that a lot of people attributed the different directions for some of these books now just dropped 10K in 1 month. That's insane. We just hinged an entire initiative on these two titles, Batgirl and Harley Quinn, because of how successful they were. But the reality of it is that I think a lot of people are attributing the initiative to these two books when that's not really what they should be attributing it to. I'm not about to sit here and defend DC for the initiative or anything like that. I will say DC, we've complained multiple times. There was a good point in time where we were complaining that every single book that we were reviewing, and at the time we were reviewing a lot more books in depth than we are now, there's a lot of books that were really dark, and it was getting old just reading the same stuff happening in every single book. Nothing different happening. Everybody was beating the crap out of each other, super violent, super, you know, mature. Just, there was no fun in any of the books. That being said, DCU initiative, they basically were trying to figure out some way of bringing some life into some of the titles. That's not to say that, you know, they made all the titles fun. They made all the titles light. They tried to do something where it gave a little bit more variety to what they had. And to me, that's what they needed. They needed some more variety. The problem is the variety is not always going to take off. There's certain things that people are going to pick up on and they're going to really enjoy. And there's things that people aren't going to pick up on. I mean, like the idea of doing Bizarro, Batmite, these are different toned books, but they're not putting these books out to be like, hey, you know what? We know we're going to sell 70,000 issues of this one book. They know that's not going to happen. So the thing is, if they stuck to what they know sells well, we would have nothing but 15 Batman titles. Yep. And that would be it. because that's the way it works. I mean, we already know that we're getting Batman and Robin Eternal, Dark Knight 3, Batman Europa. That's literally adding an additional 6 Batman issues per month. Even though Batman and Robin Eternal is Robin 2, I mean, we are adding 6 more
titles
per month come November. So in the large scheme of things, DC is trying, they're experimenting. They're experimenting with different things. When the article posted with they've lost $2 million, I look at that and say, that's not really that big of a surprise. They moved from one coast to the other. So.
And convergence.
Let's talk about that for a minute.
Let's think about, and I do want to get this out here too on the record. Like, there's no doubt the convergence, I mean, the moving is a gigantic thing, right? That really is. That's a huge, to move a corporate office from New York to LA is dumb amounts of money, right? I mean, just your corporate relocation packages for your employees probably cost them $1 million, you know? Remember, when you corporately relocate, and anyone's having to do it, it's the most nutty thing in the world, but when you were really relocated by a corporation, it's not like you moving. Like, you walk out of your house, people come in and pack you up, and when you show up at your new place, they put your stuff back. You know? Put your family on a flight, they send your cars across the country. It's not like moving. Corporate relocation is a whole different deal. And that's expensive, so they probably spent $1 million there. But that aside, convergence, I don't think DCU is the problem for the sales. I don't think DCU is where they're losing money. If they're losing money anywhere, I think it's because of convergence. They had 2 months, where sales were low. You know, they didn't have the big Batman books, the Justice League books. Sales weren't great, and you had 2 months of it, as opposed to just the 1 month a year for the special event. I think you put that on the moving, and I think that's what happened, and I don't think it's a mystery, but I definitely don't think it's the tonal shift. I think the tonal shift is the thing that needs to be there. You gotta bring in readers, new readers, you got us. When I said, me, Dustin, and Stella, you got us. We're gonna read Batman. It would have to be pretty bad for us not to read it, right? It'd have to be almost borderline terrible for you to put down the book. So you got us. But you need to be able to bring in young people. As someone who's a father, like, I can't give her Snyder's Batman, but I can give her Batgirl now. I can give her Gotham Academy. She reads all those books and she enjoys them. So yeah, I don't think it's the DCU that's the problem. I think there's a lot of things that went wrong from this year, but I don't think it was the last batch of new titles that was the problem.
All right. So, I mean, the big thing is, I just want to, so that aside, putting that $2 million figure that somehow became such a headline and a lot of people were talking about, and a lot of people were blaming the DCU initiative as the reason for the fall. I agree the convergence thing was a huge thing because convergence in general, like, it didn't have very good sales. The Convergence main series was in the top 10, but there was a lot of books that they normally would make a lot of, you know, they would sell a lot of copies of that weren't even releasing. You know, if it wasn't for Batman and Justice League and Superman coming out with their issues, if they didn't push those issues back till the end of April, there would have been a huge problem with sales for those 2 months. They came out right at the end of April, which meant that they were also being sold in May. So that affects the sales too. So anyway, moving on to this other part. So potentially the initial response was, Bleeding Cool posting up this article saying they were down. Then they basically said the next day, by the way, basically what is going to happen due to DC getting, you know, losing this much money is that we are actually entering a phase where DC is going to start canceling more titles, reducing their page counts, adding more ads, and, you know, keeping the prices the same, which we've seen before. It's not something new. DC did say before that if they started a new series, they were going to give it at least 12 issues before they canceled it. They didn't want to, you know, kill their series too quickly. They wanted to give the series an actual chance, and that's also the reason why we're seeing more miniseries, because miniseries aren't necessarily going to have much longer runs, but at the same time, they're going to have shorter runs and they're going to have a planned ending. It's not going to be, you know, let's do let's do 12 issues, maybe, but we're going to do 3 story arcs of 4 issues apiece, because we don't know when we're going to get canceled. It wasn't like that. They were actually going to give the writers a chance to do what they wanted to on the books. Props to them for doing that. I think we all agree that it was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was way better, and it was a great thing for DC to do. Now, the problem is that because I live in this little bubble that I like to call the TBU bubble.
Oh dear.
And the bubble, you know, doesn't deal with a lot of DC, other DC comics. And it doesn't deal with
Marvel.
Other Marvel. You know, it doesn't deal with Marvel. And it doesn't deal with the other publishers. I don't really know what happens outside of this little bubble. So, for the most part, I rely on Stella, who I also know does not live in a giant Marvel bubble.
No.
But she does have some Marvel inside of her bubble. Mm-hmm. And I rely on her knowledge of what's going on over there. But I believe to a degree Ed's not super familiar with what's going on with Marvel either.
But not with Marvel, but it's funny, I'm actually pretty switched into like the Image, the IDW, Titan, like the more independent stuff. But Marvel to me is can't do it.
So the basic gist of what I'm trying to get at is because I live in this bubble, when these stories come out from Bleeding Cool and they're basically comparing Marvel to DC and saying that DC is doing the horrible job, I don't know if they're saying this because it's just in response to the sales numbers of Marvel leading DC in sales. If it's because Marvel is producing better quality stuff than DC, I don't really know because all I have is the little TBU bubble that I got. So that being said, I don't really know if, you know, part of this has to do with the fact that DC just doesn't, you know, they're just not up to par on every aspect that Marvel is. I don't really know. But my understanding is I've heard a lot of complaints about a lot of different things at Marvel. Variant covers, their prices for per comic are all, you know, I've heard the same things. I've heard people complain about the exact same things that people complain about at DC. But the weird thing is that no matter all of that stuff aside, Marvel's still selling more.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably where a lot of this comes down to is that, you know, I'm sure a lot of the inconsistencies with people saying different things has to do with the fact that DC sells less than Marvel. So it's always going to be, what is the second company going to do to try to dethrone the first company? It's always going to be like that.
But, you know, I don't know if that really makes sense, to be honest. I mean, I agree that what you're saying makes sense, and I agree that people think like that. But in the really real world, like, it's okay to be two. Just be a really good two.
Yeah.
You know, like Christ, look at Chrysler and look at how they reinvented themselves. When Lee Iacocca came in, they were never going to become as big as Ford. They were going to be the second or third best car, you know, distribution thing in the world, but they were going to make a better profit and they were going to make a better product. And you know what I'm saying? Like, it's okay to be two. It really is. Just embrace it. Don't worry. I mean, I've always had this war of we sold more copies than you is concentrate on making good stuff, a coherent universe, and the rest of it will sort itself out.
Yeah, and I think it does go back and forth because, you know, years from now, we're going to be wondering why Marvel is not doing as well as DC. And I think they're just in a funk right now, DC, because you talk about convergence. If we think of that as the last big event, in the end, what impact did it have on the DC universe? Not much except for the whole, you know, these crises did not happen. But Secret Wars, things are happening, and however that ends, that's going to irrevocably change the universe. You know, you have these two universes coming together, and coming out of that are these books that's going to be incorporating the Ultimate Universe and the 616 universe. So what they are doing has a purpose. So when you are buying things and you're reading this event, there's a reason for it and new books that are coming out of it, you know. So I just feel like Marvel for me right now, I think they take chances and yes, sometimes they fail, but I think it's a well-rounded company with the stuff that they have out, and they're just not afraid to try these things like Ms. Marvel. Did we really think that, you know, a Muslim teen superhero would work? I think I was a little skeptical, but that's one of my favorite books that I read. And yeah, I don't know. I guess I just want to give my money to a company that they're doing stuff and it makes sense. And if they're doing this big event, there's a purpose for it. And it's going to be carried through. But not to say that I don't still read DC, because I do, but I think that's where some of the problems lie.
Yeah, and I think that's why Flashpoint is one of my favorite events, because something happened. You know what I'm saying? Like, we can argue about how much we like, dislike, hate, insert adjective here, you know, the new 52, but at least when Flashpoint happened, it meant something. You know? Look at Forever Evil, and what happened? Nothing. I mean, Dick Grayson, everyone knows who he is now, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think
well, we'll see how that changes when he comes back to life.
Basically, I don't want to talk about this for too long, but I think there was a lot of, you know, there's a lot of heat that DC's getting. There was actually a piece that was ran by the Los Angeles, the LA Daily News, about DC Comics' move from New York to Burbank. The person who wrote it happens to be an ex, comic book resources writer, which I found kind of interesting. But for the most part, it was a fluff piece that basically talked about the move. But in the middle of part of the article, they actually talked about, you know, well, what about the, you know, what about the stuff that's, you know, the rumors of the company losing money and the initiative not working? And they specifically said not all of the experiments succeed, of course, but the co-publisher said, despite rumors to the contrary, the company's not backing down from the DCU approach. If you're trying to build a fan base, a new audience, you've got to nurture it. You've got to take your time. You've got to take your losses, DiDio said. Sooner or later, it's going to take hold and hopefully be a leader in the business. Right now, our goal is to try and feed out as much product that's as different as possible to try and attract the widest audience possible. The company will start adjusting a little bit and start to focus, he said, looking at what's working with the DCU initiative and what has not. We had some hits. We've had some things that are underperforming, Lee said. What we did in June is definitely a step one towards this sort of transformation of the comics line. And I think that story is still being written. So the basic gist is they knew going into June that not everything that they put out was going to work.
Mm-hmm.
What they wanted to make sure everybody knew was that they were going to give the stuff that was going to be happening in June a chance. They wanted to give it a fighting chance, not like they did last October where they released a couple issues and then literally canceled them three issues in because they were underperforming, because it's just
terrible
not
when
worth
they do
it.
That. Just terrible.
There's no, and the worst thing is when issue one comes out, 2 weeks after issue one comes out, you see a solicitation saying, oh, by the way, two, 3 months from now, you're going to see an issue and that's the last issue. Like, what investment do you have in that book at that point? None. So, I mean, the thing is, I'm glad they're giving the books a chance. Not everything is going to work. I'm not really a huge fan of what's happening with Harley Quinn and Harley Quinn and Power Girl, as my synopsis is that I give every single episode detail.
I thought that just meant you didn't understand what was going on.
No, to a degree I understand what's going on, okay. But it's just I don't really care. Okay. Like, I'm not really into the books. But at the same point, that's why I say go to the website, because the synopsis that Gary does for both of those books is extremely detailed and better than anything that I could sit here and try to summarize in like two sentences. So that all being said, there are certain books that people are going to gravitate for and enjoy. Like, I've been enjoying Batgirl because it is so different than what we were getting before this direction of Batgirl. Catwoman is a very good turn of, you know, from what they were. Now, neither one of those books have anything to do with the DCU, because to be quite honest, nothing really changed in the Batman universe direction wise other than the Jim Gordon becoming Batman, which had, it's not really a direction. That's just part of the story that's bleeded into all of the other books. But all that being said, there, you know, there are some things that have happened inside my little TVU bubble that I have enjoyed the changes. I honestly can't say that there's anything out there that I'm not enjoying that they actually changed. Red Hood and Arsenal, they did not change. Teen Titans, they really didn't change. You know, they are basically the same book. They just renumbered them and they basically are telling slightly different stories, but it's basically the same thing. When you keep creators on, and I want to say, I think Teen Titans, Will Pfeiffer took over Teen Titans, I believe, when they renumbered from Scott Lobdell. But honestly, it really wasn't that big of a change for me to get really excited. Sean Ryan took over Suicide Squad, but it hasn't really been that great. It hasn't been bad this time around as much as it was the first time, but it's not really that great. So the thing is, I just want everything to be great. If you look across the board since
not asking June, for much, are you?
Yeah, if you just look across the board from June at all of the books that we review on the website, the actual average rating, and I did the math on this because I wanted to find this out, comparing these 3 months to the 3 months prior to Convergence, the average rating actually increased one full star, which is a lot, considering we base it off of five stars or five batarangs per se, but the basic gist of it is that one full star rating is basically a 20% increase.
Big jump, yeah.
Yeah, that's a huge jump. I mean, if you were in high school still and you had a 70% and you jumped up 20%, that's pretty damn good. So, just saying, you know, obviously they're doing something right. Either that or we just have gotten some really great reviewers who really like certain books and don't care about other things.
They're doing, what they're doing is they're not making it where if you don't like one book, you don't like them all. Right?
That's true.
Like,
yeah.
It's become where it's okay to not like a book because there's a book you will, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's a book you will enjoy. But if there's a book you dislike, if you're like, oh man, I don't like this, you pretty much didn't like everything. You know?
Yeah.
So they've opened up, and some of their stuff, like, not, even non-Batman, like, this is gonna sound ridiculous, but if you guys aren't reading Prez, he's unbelievably good and smart. And it's supposed to be, like, someone had to talk me into reading, I'm like, you know, like, but someone come in, and it is so good. Like, it is like, how would you say this? This is like Veep as a comic book, if I could describe. It is really good stuff. And maybe they won't all be huge successes as far as sales numbers, but I would much rather have a company like DC take some shots and miss than just keep publishing the same old stuff.
Yes. And that's the thing. I think the biggest problem nowadays is why keep going in the same direction, especially when you are number two. Why not take some risks? Because what do you really have to lose?
What's going to happen?
I was just going to say, think about what would have happened if they had stopped DC New 52 after it just started. Where we would be. I mean, that was a risky endeavor that they did. So I think anything, they've got to stick with it for an amount of time to figure out what happens. Because no one really liked the idea of New 52 until it started getting better, you know, 6 months, a year later. So
even if they go back on it in some degree, I think what they should do, and I know Vertigo was supposed to be this in its own very different way, but for the DC main line, they should always have two or three books that are, I don't know if experimental is the right word, but you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, always, but like different types.
Yeah, like always have the ability to let creators bring new and interesting stuff to the table because, like I said, man, I'm totally cool with occasionally reading something and being like, oh, that sucked. You know, but I would hate it if, I mean, I just let them be creative. And if they fail sometime, that's part of life.
Yeah, and honestly, I mean, the big thing is, I just think back to 2 years ago.
Oh.
Like 2 years from this point. We're in the middle of the New 52. It was horrible. Like, I was like 10 seconds away from just saying, this podcast is done. Because it was that hard to read some of these books. Like, obviously there's been books that are good, but there was a lot, and I mean a lot of stuff that was just horrible. And honestly, I have to say, Ed, thank you for sticking around because Ed was with me on that 0.5 cast that we did.
Oh, yeah.
Basically, every single book we did on that 0.5 cast, we hated. And it was like the biggest chore in the world to do. And for Ed to come on board and then to stick around after we ended the 0.5 cast because it was just that bad. You know, props to Ed for sticking around. But like, we were literally very, very close to just saying, we're done. Because it was that.
Do you remember, like, there were months where you would literally, like, it'd be like Anne Nesenti's Catwoman, and then you'd read, like, some weird ventriloquist thing going on in Batgirl, and then it was bad. I mean, yeah. It was
really bad.
And, you know, I think that's maybe when I really developed my super soft spot for Scott Snyder, right? Because there was a time.
Because that was one of the only things that was decent back then.
There was about a solid 6 months to a year time where everything almost, but Snyder's Batman was bad. You know?
Yeah.
So maybe that's where I got the soft spot because he almost kept a lot of us going, I think, for a while.
Yeah. I mean, and that's not to say that everything was bad. There are some exceptions.
Yeah.
I enjoyed Kyle Higgins' run on Nightwing.
Tomasi on Batman and Robin.
Yeah, Tomasi on Batman and Robin. But I mean, most of that stuff, because I think at that time, Nightwing and Batgirl, we were reviewing on the main cast.
And we didn't get any of that stuff.
Yeah, we didn't get any of that stuff on the 0.5 cast. The 0.5 cast was, I think,
Catwoman,
you know,
like
Red Hood and Arsenal, Red Teen Hood, Titans,
Teen
Catwoman.
Titans.
It was horrible. Absolutely horrible.
But anyway,
I appreciate DC for stepping up and taking some risks. And, you know, you as the listeners of our podcast, we encourage you to take some risks too. You know, we post a lot of, you know, we post a lot of reviews for all of these books, but the whole reason we do that is so that we want you to get into what's going on in the story. We want you to say, wow, this actually sounds really interesting. Maybe I should go pick this up. Because the thing is, there isn't a whole lot of other options. We don't want you, you know, doing something where you're, you know, you're pocketing a comic book inside the comic shop because you don't want to fork out the $3. We don't want you to do something like that. So why not, you know, post a synopsis detailing some of the stuff that happened, and then you can actually get into a book based off of our synopsises or us talking about the book's synopses.
That's what it is, not synopsis.
Yes, I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is. Just like crises.
Yes, exactly.
Platypi.
Yes. Crisi. Crisi. But we encourage you to, you know, the whole reason we are here doing this podcast, posting those reviews on the website, is that we want you, the listeners, to be checking out some of these books. You know, we're telling you which ones are good and which ones are bad. If it's bad, we're not expecting you to go pick it up. Honestly, it's probably more of an advertisement to not pick it up. But we want those bad books to be weeded out and to be replaced with good books. That's the way we want. That's what we want. We want a perfect little bubble of TBU. That's what we want. Of great books that everyone can, you know, pick up and everybody can enjoy. But there needs to be something for everybody. And that's really what they, you know, luckily because the TBU bubble is so large when it comes to DC, we are privileged to have a lot of things before a lot of the other titles and a lot of the other characters are able to have. So, basically that's the gist of it. That's pretty much everything for this episode. I want to remind everybody to head over to the website for all the kinds of news related to movies, TV, merchandise, video games, and of course the comics. Also be sure to check out all of our other podcasts that we have to offer. We have tons of new episodes posting every single week for all of our other podcasts. Also be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Be sure to join our Facebook group to chat with other Bat fans. Also, leave us reviews on iTunes. Those are always greatly appreciated. And remember to leave your comments in the comment section of the podcast post for us to discuss in the next episode. With that, still looking for news writers for the website. If you are interested, email me at tbu@thebatmanuniverse.net. And with that is everything. This is Dustin.
This is Ed.
And this is Stella.
And you've been listening to the Batman Universe Comic Podcast. I'll see you guys in 2 weeks.